Edifield Flack on Forbes Avenue.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.com.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to C-Pop Central here on WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. This is DJ Lee. And as you can hear, I've got some very good songs lined up for you. It's going to be another funky hour. But first of all, we're going to have Hikari no Disco by Capsule. This one came out in 2016.
Few years, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected how we live our daily lives.
Today, one in five Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges, but many of us do not understand what we are facing or how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we work every day to eliminate stigma, combat mental illness and substance use disorders, and advance mental health.
If you or someone you love needs help, you are not alone. Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
I found hope in the midst of an overwhelming situation.
I let go of trying to control things that I had no control over, and that helped me find peace of mind.
Alcoholism is a disease that can affect any family. Everyone suffers, but there is help and hope at Al-Anon Family Groups.
I was constantly stressed and worried. Now I approach each day with joy and gratitude.
In Al-Anon, families and friends of alcoholics find new ways to heal from the effects of a loved one's drinking.
Al-Anon gave me my life back. I'm a better father and husband.
Are you in an overwhelming situation because of someone else's drinking?
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Local and virtual meetings are available. Maybe one could work for you. For information, call 1-866-200-0033 or visit alanon.org/hope.
You are listening to Public Affairs on WRCT Pittsburgh, WRCT.org.
Welcome home, y'all. It is Native Land's mini pod that drops every week. Many pods.
What are we going to do for our 100th
episode? He does that all the time. He's disruptive. He likes being disruptive.
What is going to happen for our 100th episode? We're 10 away.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Can I just say, Andrew, to be one of the most polite people I've ever met, when we hit record on this podcast, I don't know who you morph into. It's a gremlin.
He's disruptive.
No, I morph into a young brother who wants to pester you.
But on that note,
you're older than
being
me.
Pestered. Yes. We have two things. One, what are we going to do for the 100th episode?
I think that is right.
That's something to consider. Two, next week, I believe, is it next week or the week after, is the holiday, a national holiday.
August 10th.
Them white chairs.
Throw them things.
Get them white chairs.
What are we doing for that? Wouldn't it be beautiful if our 100th episode
coincided?
But it doesn't. It doesn't coincide. I said correlated. Oh.
You know what? We need to ask. You know we should ask Tiff if Britt will let us use that picture of Momo in that white chair for the chair episode.
I know she won't, but we could ask.
So cute.
She never shows the babies.
So cute.
But I do like it. Well, anyway, just a heads up that we have this holiday coming up. But for this particular episode, you know, on this week on the podcast, we were talking about like Black elitism. We had that great interview with Lanny Smith from I'm Actively Black. Thank you guys for tuning in and weighing in with your thoughts there. I'm still going through and sifting through comments. So I appreciate the input that you guys always have. But it did kind of, we had a few different threads. It led us to a few different places when it comes to community. And one thing we talked about was that Angela, you kind of perked up when we said this, when we talked about during my time at BET, we had to be all things to all people. And when it came to news and information, Black people like their information validated by white folks. Yes. Like we could do the same programming, but if it was on CNN, then it was legit. And I just wonder why that is. What's the danger in that? Where did that come from? Obviously, white supremacy. Can it be disrupted? How do we disrupt it? In a lot of ways, it has been disrupted. You know, social media certainly democratized who has a voice and who gets to weigh in. But that came with a lot of challenges because people who call themselves journalists are not journalists. You having a cell phone and a podcast does not make you a journalist. Citizen journalism, where people are like reporting who don't really know how to capture a story. I think these things are great because it's access to information, but you have to know how to decipher and intermix that. So I don't know. And, you know, we saw people take advantage and spread disinformation intentionally or unintentionally in doing things like that. So it seems like a sticky time and a sticky topic.
I appreciate this topic for a number of reasons. What it reminds me of is white validation by Black people hasn't always only been sought in the news space. I can think of a time growing up where I heard elders say things like, "Now I need my doctor to be white."
Want to try tirzepatide?
So this is tirzepatide, and it is the number one weight loss medication.
Right? It is, it's scary. Like, I strive to find Black medical professionals and Black lawyers. And, like, I like for my team to be Black. And so it's jarring to hear people say that, you know, white ice or show white ice is colder and that white is right. And I don't just think it is isolated to the new space. I wonder if some of that just has to do with like slavery mentality, right? Like if people cozied up to Massa because if they did, maybe that meant their lives would be saved, literally saved. That meant their families wouldn't be broken up. I don't know where it comes from, but it does make me very uncomfortable, especially when you heard Lanny say on the show, right? Like $30 billion. We spend $30 billion on apparel in our community. And yes, apparel and shoes. The thing that also just comes to mind, and now I feel like I'm hopping all over the place. Vince Evans sent me something on Instagram the other day of an entity that was holding like a back to school drive for clothes and shoes, but they were giving out Nikes. You know, people started waiting in that line at 9 p.m. the night before, right? And we had to really, really promote like giving away food or paying a light bill or whatever. And the question really was that was thought of is what would have happened if we would have been giving away sneakers? So I think I do want to understand like what is our attachment to looking good? Have we assigned, you know, psychology to how we appear? If we look the part, does that mean we're ready to really, you know, play the part a little better? What is it about white supremacist mentality and structures that have made us think that that's better collectively? Not me as an individual, I've said that. But yeah, I'm curious to understand y'all's thoughts about this white validation model and how we disrupt it.
I just want to say, because you reference Vince a lot, Vince Evans is, and correct me if it's wrong, he's the executive director of the Congressional Black Caucus.
Yes.
Somebody you work with on State of the People tour. And as you all know, I've mentioned it a few times, Angela used to be executive director of the Congressional Black Caucus. So he is her successor many times.
Baby removed. Brother.
So shout out to Vince.
Baby yes. big brother, because he think he the boss.
Sorry, yes. Andrew, I didn't mean it.
No.
I met him on Andrew's campaign. That's another thing.
Yes,
sorry.
He is a rattler. And, yes, and a very, very smart political strategist. So they're lucky Absolutely. To have him. Angela raised, I thought, two You may have stated them as one, but I felt like two different strands of this, which were sort of the value or the stock we put on presentation, how we look, brand, that includes brands, that includes labels, that includes color of the bottom of your shoe, you know, and so on and so forth. And then I think there is probably the question that is encompassing of this all, which is, where did we learn that white was right? And that didn't mean that other things weren't right, but it needed to be measured up against. When did we make the Eurocentric standard the ruler by which all things are to be measured? It's a sad acknowledgement. It is a true acknowledgement, however. And I think for those who it is not true for, meaning those in our community who resist that, have to resist it actively. And the reason why I say it has to be actively resisted, this mentality, is this white pejoritarian and majoritarian view of where we put value, is that society in every single way reinforces white as right. In every single way. If a black person does this thing, it's looked at as criminal, ghetto. I can't believe they tried it. Tiffany referenced this in our main episode this week, where she said, had BET spun off with Real Housewives franchise and began with the Real Housewives of Atlanta or Potomac or whatever, she is absolutely right. We would have blown BET up and basically said, you are bastardizing our black women who have achieved certain levels of success in our society. And now you're telling the rest of the world that all we do is fight, that all we can manage doing is yelling at each other, backstabbing each other, and talking about each other behind each other's back. That's what you're telling the world that we are. Andy Cohen does it. And it's like everybody's a celebrity now. Right. Everybody, you know, they're the hottest thing since, you know, sliced bread. So what I mean by actively resist it is you actually have to play through your mind the scenario of, like, questioning, why did I do a thing a certain way? Why do I feel like in order to go into this establishment, I have to look like this when there's not even a dress code that would dictate such? Right. But I mentally told myself, from a standpoint of value and bringing value and being seen as a person of value, this is how I have to look. And moreover, this is how I have to comport myself. We talked about Ralph Lauren Polo. I think about the fact that Ralph Lauren has done all these Olympic uniforms. I don't know for how many years it's been doing it, but for as long as I can remember, I just remember Summer Olympics uniforms being done by Ralph Lauren Polo. Polo Ralph Lauren. And they're so, in my opinion, Nantucket versus Martha's Vineyard and the way they look. And what, I don't necessarily associate. It isn't like, that's not my version of Americana. If I have a version of Americana, right? Or what I would say, what would be my version of patriotism, right? It didn't necessarily reflect me, but it is very apple pie, American apple pie. And athletes galore, black, white, and otherwise, don them, and they don't have a choice. They have to don them. And then all of us who are viewing it, they make up our minds, since we saw LeBron in it and everybody else, that now this is the status. This is the new status quo. And anything that isn't it is a knockoff. And by the way, when we apply that to products then that are produced by black people, it's worse than a knockoff. Right. It fell off a truck when it comes to how we view stuff that comes from black folks. It's so deep. And this is why I was saying this is really, it's an impossible challenge for black entrepreneurs when you're selling a product, because you are really trying to, you can't just focus on the perfection of the thing you're selling. You're also having to, certainly if you're leading with black, you're going to have to change mindsets in so many ways. And I know that there are listeners who say, I go out of my way and I buy black, blah, 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 blah. And if you do, salute to you, but I will tell you, and I don't have quantitative data to point to other than what was quoted earlier, the $30 billion that we spend in this area, and black companies getting less than $1 billion, less than 1%, $1 billion of that 30. I don't have any data to support it, but I'll just say you are the exception to the rule. You're the overwhelming exception to the rule. And y'all, I think we absolutely have to have some education in reprogramming and reimagining ourselves and our value through our lens that we then start to convince ourselves is the majority lens. And frankly, anything that doesn't agree with us don't matter. That's how I am as a Rattler, as a Fam Ewing. I don't care where you went, Morehouse, Spelman, y'all, great. You had a great experience, but it wasn't Fam U. That's how I feel about my institution. They inculcated that in me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we're going to have to feel about ourselves and the products we produce, the value we add.
But even outside the product, because I think it's a very distinct difference conversation with the conversation we had on the main show. I think it's more of the concept.
Yes.
Not the products we produce, which I think is a great conversation that we had this week. But just to draw the distinction, it is a mind shift that has to happen. And I don't.
Completely.
Yeah, I think like we, what'd you call it? A re-education?
A re-education, yeah.
Yes.
A paradigm shift. Yeah.
Yes. And I think you've spoken to that, Angela, the conversation I always reference, I write about with your perspective of a lack of imagination among us because of all we've known. And, you know, I talked a bit about that from the book Sky Full of Elephants by Sebo Campbell, where you can tap into your imagination and you get to ponder, who are we if not in reference to them? Who are we if we are not responding to something? Who are we when we get to be free? I feel like this anytime I'm on the continent, like there, you can't give that head nod to everybody. They like, yeah, okay, hello to you too. Like, we all black in here, but here it's such a tight-knit community and we have been so robbed of our fragility, of our safety, that when we see each other, it is an acknowledgement to you. One, I see you. Two, you're safe. Because if some shit goes down, I don't know you, but I know you. And I got your back and we're together. And three, I am yours and you are mine.
Hmm.
I think we have to start there. And I wonder, honestly, if we're losing a bit of that. With younger generations, with some of our social norms and mores that have been disrupted. I don't go to church. And I know a lot of families, like, they don't take their kids to church every Sunday. I grew up going to church, but now I don't go to church every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder, like, and none of my friends do. My friends and their kids, none of them, they are not at church every Sunday. And so I wonder, do they know, if I said to them, God is good, would they know how to respond?
They'd be like, yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Right. Right. Perhaps they might. But that's such a cornerstone of who we were. Like, even if you're not Christian, if you are not a believer, it's like how the Jewish community, it can be a faith and a culture. Like, black church is a part of our culture, even if you don't go. And as we advance and, you know, just move on in society, I wonder, are we losing some of that as we make our culture heavily available across social media? Anybody, it used to be our secret. Now anybody can tap into it. Are we diluting it? By sharing it. And
so
these
you
aren't
up
questions
a whole
to be
thread.
Answered.
Yeah.
You've grabbed a whole
But that was the
thread.
Conversation. Yeah, like that was the conversation to, you know, how to protect, acknowledge, and celebrate our culture within us. Not necessarily from a product standpoint, but...
But I think we've done that I think black people have, for as long as I remember, haven't had a problem seeing each other, feeling protection, seeing the acknowledgement. I still think we're perplexed and are still overcome by this idea that we can see each other, love each other, protect each other, and still think white is the right.
Yeah.
There has to be the validation, has to be the stamp, must be the approval.
I shouldn't say don't you guys. Let me not ask a leading question. Do you all feel that part of that comes from deep-rooted fear? Like, do we think that people earnestly believe that white is safer, better, you know, or do people make that decision? And by we, again, I'm not talking about the three co-hosts, but when we try to examine the sociology of this or the psychology of this, really, do we think that it comes from like hedging their bets?
What's allowed? I think it all comes
like
from
like a permissible
allowing.
Thing. Okay.
Absolutely. I think that way about voting. I think that way about business. I think that way about all things. I think at the root of it very much so has to do with what they're allowing. They're allowing this. And so long as the goalposts, again, so long as you are the thing by which everything is measured against, what's legal, what's not.
Yeah.
What's acceptable, what's not. Right? What's the right institution to attend to be considered elite? And what isn't? So if they're setting, and again, like I said, in every
That's
way
so
society
good,
reinforces
Andrew.
This.
I'm not trying to cut every you out, but think about even black banks. Like think like we have friends who are very educated. Y'all got elite friends. If you talk to them about putting their money in black banks, especially before 2020, what's some of the stuff you heard back?
I'm not going to say on this pod.
But like some people would say, like, I might lose my money if I do that, as if FDIC ain't there.
Don't apply.
I think that's a good point. And I actually think black banks and black finances is a whole other mini pod that we need to have.
Black lawyers, black doctors, black professionals and specialists.
It's really
period.
About white validation, regardless of the industry, right? It's a broad, I was just bringing up another point. Like I can think of the, not even just the response y'all, but the resistance to all of these things when it's just mentioned. Anyway,
I would love somebody from the financial industry to come on and talk a little more about Black Bank. So whomever is keeping the scroll, let's add Black Finance and Black Banks. But let me just say, I think my favorite episodes of NLP is when I speak less and I am learning so much from my two co-hosts. Like any time that happens where I'm like captivated, like I'm learning, you're saying something, you're informing me, you know, and opining, but informing me. And I feel like that happened a lot today. So I just want to thank my co-host for this enlightening conversation.
Thank you.
And vice versa, by the way.
Oh, well, you know, kind of, because Andrew made a smart comment earlier. I was asking Andrew, what time is 18:30? And he's like 6:30. I'm like, I know, but like on the global clock, that's military time, the global clock. And he's like, military it's clock universal. Is the global clock. So what he didn't have to say was, you idiot. It was just implied.
No,
well,
no,
I'm
no,
still
no.
confused.
Angela, does he not do that?
Oh, wait, I got it now. No, I just had a worse moment. I was like, but it's not the same time for everybody, but that's not the point. It's like,
it's wherever you are from.
I know, but I got confused when you said
that
global clock. I was like, what?
The same.
We not all in the same time zone. Now I'm back. You're saying the universal clock, not the universal time. I'm on it.
You're right. There it is. Yes. A good distinction.
Now here's the question. What time is it on Saturn?
Girl, please.
Have you ever been to space? Have you ever been to space?
Ask Musk. Talk to Elon.
Oh, I don't know. You just ruined the moment.
All right. Well,
okay,
anyway.
Fine. Talk to Katy Perry. And
why?
Welcome home, y'all. That concludes
that was
this mini vibe.
You know what he just did? He just white validated at the end of the show. Why we can't ask Beyonce?
Or Gail.
Beyonce.
No, Katy Perry went to space. Yes.
Oh,
she was
I didn't
on
know
the
that.
Spaceship.
I'm messing this up today. My bad, y'all. I didn't even know.
Okay.
Sorry.
On that note,
there was another name, but I wasn't going to drop it.
We are taking off. We are ready for lunch.
We're out of this world.
Houston, we ain't got no problems. Welcome home, y'all.
Welcome home.
Native Land Pod is a production of iHeartRadio in partnership with Reason Choice Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Now I'm looking right at y'all. Let me tell y'all what Shannon needs.
Let me
tell you what my baby needs. He need him an old fat gal who can bake good cakes, make some smothered turkey wings, who gonna rub his feet at the nighttime, okay, and gonna have a sip of his cognac to make him feel better about himself when he come home at night. That's what Shannon needs. You don't need no 26-year-old girl. You don't need no 36-year-old girl. Auntie talking to you. Take and get your old that can love you old. You trying to hang out with these young... Can't do it, Shannon. You just can't. Do it.
We're ready. We're prepared. Do not give in to fear. We are fearless. This is not the time to be afraid. This is a time to stand up and fight back and to resist any temptation for them to divide us. We're in this together. The rule of law is on our side.
We will not give in, not give up. We will not capitulate. We will not bow. We will not bend. We will survive.
Shannon Sharp, I mentioned yesterday, he stepped down. Oh, no, he didn't step down. He got sat down. ESPN was like, thank you. We parted ways. He spoke out. He made a statement. Before I play the statement, I want to remind people that some of us are not mature enough to take good advice. I've said this to a bunch of people, and I think I've said it on these airwaves. When I started being obedient, and I'm saying this as somebody that I'm sure most of you would say, oh, she's not obedient. No, I'm very obedient. I do not disobey the laws that are presented to me. And good advice is one thing. There's a scripture that says plans fail for lack of counsel. With many advisors, they succeed. But it also talks about wise counsel. It also talks about seeking wise counsel. I seek wise counsel. I don't really make a decision without Drew calls him his board of directors. I don't make a decision in my life, not a major one, without having wise counsel. And I think that's super important. I'm not going to lean on my own understanding. I'm saying something today. Okay. This man sat across from a woman, Monique, who gave him some very good advice. And I don't think he took it. Let's remind people, Smiths, Club Shay Shay, Monique, play it.
Now I'm looking right at her. Let me tell y'all what Shannon needs.
Let me
tell you what my baby needs. He need him an old fat gal who can bake good cakes, make some smothered turkey wings, who gonna rub his feet at the nighttime, okay, and gonna have a sip of his cognac to make him feel better about himself when he come home at night. That's what Shannon needs. You don't need no 26-year-old girl. You don't need no 36-year-old girl. Auntie talking to you. Take that and love your old. You're trying to hang out with these. Can't do it, Shannon. You just can't do it.
Dang.
When they want you to go for a fourth round, you're looking at her like, it's not me. You want some money to go to Starbucks?
Yeah,
because I can't go no further. But if you get your older girl, when you get to that fourth round, she's going to say, hold on. Let me go get you some eggs and cheese and some toast with apple butter, because that's going to get your energy back up. I'm talking right to you. Thought I was going to be scared. Yes, I'm talking. And I know old gal, she'll be good to you. Her name is Eladora.
Eladora. No, he wanted to get Becky. Want to go get Amy, want to go get Jenny. $50 million lawsuit. Don't know what the settlement is. Somewhere in the $20 million range. More than he made playing an entire career. Football Hall of Fame career. Getting his head busted in. Probably knees hurt, hips hurt. Whole career. Didn't make as much as he's paying a 20-something-year-old who never has to work again in her life. So his brother, Sterling Sharp, who I actually knew first because I used to cover sports, and Sterling was the more talented one, right? From what I remember. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame as well, Sterling Sharp. And so, well, you'll hear Shannon Sharp tried to get ESPN to wait to fire him publicly. Because his brother is being inducted into the Hall of Fame as well. Two brothers. What an amazing family, the Sharp family. Brother was a wide receiver? Was his brother a wide receiver? I think he was a wide receiver, yep, for the Green Bay Packers. Play the clip, Smiths.
To get started, obviously, I'm sure everybody's heard the news by now that I will not be returning to ESPN. I found out this information a little earlier in the week. And really, the only thing that I really ask is, like, guys, my brother's going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I really want it to be about him, and I want it to be about my family. I know this would, I said, this coming out will overshadow everything that he's worked his entire life for. And unfortunately, you know, it didn't happen that way. And so as I told him, as I profusely apologized to him earlier today, he said, bro, stop apologizing. You don't have to apologize. I'm your big bro. I'm going to love you regardless. We all make mistakes. And he says, bro, I love you. So I'm done with this. You're done with it too. Move on. And I really enjoyed my time at ESPN. It gave me an opportunity to bring my audience that saw me really just grow They saw me, you know, Lakers in five, and they saw me say all these funny, these analogies that my grandparents gave me, and I was able to bring that to ESPN. So I'm very, very grateful for that. But I just wished, of all things, like I said, hey, they did what they felt they needed to do, and I'm at peace with that. But I just wish, guys, I just wish this thing could have waited, because I hate the fact that I'm overshadowing my brother, the first two brothers in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And this is what the headline's going to be for the next couple of days. So, bro, again, I know you told me this. I don't have to apologize, but I'm going to do it one final time tonight, and I won't apologize again. I'm sorry that I upstaged you in this manner. You know, that was never my intent. You've been my hero. You've been my role model from as long as I can remember. And I apologize, and I thank all my fans for supporting me. When I was at ESPN and every place that I've been, be it Club Shay Shay, Nightcap, Undisputed, ESPN, thank you guys for your support.
You can never upstage Sterling Sharp, Shannon Sharp. You downstage yourself and your legacy. And it's unforced. It's an unforced error, because you're not a 20-year-old or a 30-year-old where we could leave room for the things people do in their 20s and 30s. You're a man pushing 60, making choices that apparently must not have been problematic for you when you were making these choices. And again, this is not an indictment on, I know I see a lot of snow bunny commentary in social media. This is not even about his proclivities for women outside of blackness. Although there can be space to have that conversation, because I don't think those choices are made in a vacuum for him and people who, for whom that is a desire, right? I think I'm always asking this question, whether we're going to talk about Al Pacino, who just had a baby, maybe. I don't know if he got the DNA, but yeah, just had a baby, you know, with a woman who's like, she in her 20s, Miss Al Pacino's like 80. Push, you know, it is curious to me. What does a 60-year-old man have in common with a 20-something-year-old outside of sex? Yes, sex is something, but what do y'all talk? Like, what do y'all talk? You're paying this woman $20-something million. At that stage of your life, is the sex, is that the important? You know, I'm asking a question. I don't know. And, you know, really, I'm going to mind my business and drink my water. But I think there's something more here, because for me, looking at this person who has had this career, a brother just pointed out, survivor of cancer as well, his career cut short because he had a neck injury. I mean, he's been through so much. Actually, his brother's career was stopped for neck injury. But you think about somebody who has reached the pinnacle as an athlete, but maybe not as a human being. Developed as an athlete, but not necessarily as a person. And I just am going to encourage everybody to work equally. If you're in the gym, don't forego your legs. Walking around here is the physical, the emotional equivalent of somebody that never worked on their legs. Got all of the biceps and the chest, and you got walking around with these skinny ass legs. That's your insides, your emotions. Deal with the whole body, please. Please do better, because this is you're not just undermining your brother's moment. You just cut short what could have been. And you know, because we are people of short attention spans and also even shorter capacity to care about the right things, collectively, not you and me, collectively, he's going to be fine. Club Shay Shay's going to make him millions of dollars. He does that thing with Chad Johnson, who calls himself Ocho Cinco, and by the way, ESPN, because, again, they're not, these hoes ain't loyal. They're looking to probably sign Ocho Cinco to sit in that seat to capture the same audience that Shannon captured, because it's all about the numbers for them. They don't care about you as a person. They could have waited until Monday. They made a choice to embarrass you and undermine your brother on purpose, because they don't care about you.
We're ready. We're prepared. Do not give in to fear. We are fearless. This is not the time to be afraid. This is a time to stand up and fight back. And to resist any temptation for them to divide us. We're in this together. The rule of law is on our side. We will not give in, not give up. We will not capitulate. We will not bow. We will not bend. We will survive.
Two of President Trump's top foreign affairs. foreign policy officials. Special envoy to the Middle East, Steve Witkoff, and U.S. Ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee, made a rare visit to Gaza on Friday as international outrage intensifies over starvation in the region. Their stated mission? To assess conditions on the ground and help craft a plan to deliver urgently needed food and medical aid. As the United Nations reports that more than 20,000 children in Gaza have been hospitalized for acute malnutrition since April. And now, the pressure on Israel is growing, not just from advocacy organizations, but from key allies. Canada, France, and the United Kingdom are all advancing plans to formally recognize a Palestinian state, with diplomatic action expected as early as September. Even former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert recently wrote, this is back in May, enough is enough. Israel is committing war crimes. And joining us now is former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. Thank you very much for coming to the weekend, Mr. Prime Minister. As I said, in May, you said, you wrote an op-ed that said Israel is committing war crimes. This is now August 2nd. Things have gotten much worse in the region. Can you talk about how you are viewing things now, and why, I mean, genocide is a war crime. Lots of people have been accusing Israel of genocide. Is that what you are referring to when you say that the nation is committing war crimes?
Absolutely not. There is no genocide. There is not anything even close to genocide. What I said, and I think it hasn't changed, unfortunately, is that the war is perceived to be completely illegitimate, not just by the outside observers, the countries that you mentioned, but most of the Israelis. More than 70% of the Israelis just yesterday said in a poll, which is consistent with many other polls that were done over the last few months, that there is nothing that can be achieved in this military operation. We are losing soldiers, we may lose the hostages, and there are many innocent, non-involved Palestinians in Gaza which are losing their life in what is perceived to be an illegitimate war. Illegitimate at this stage, the war is a crime. And that's what I meant, and I haven't changed my mind, because I don't see yet that the government of Israel is prepared to understand that enough is enough. We have to end the war immediately. We have to bring back all the hostages, and we have to embark on a serious effort with Arab countries, Palestinians and Arab countries, to establish a security force that will take the place of Israel in Gaza, that will allow Israel to pull out completely from Gaza, and that will prevent any further activities by Hamas, terror activities against Israel, and start to change things in Gaza. That's what we need to do now.
Mr. Prime Minister, Sam Stein here. You might not be able to achieve some things in this war, but you certainly can lose things in this war. And among the things that can be lost, in addition to the horrific suffering that you're seeing there, is political support from the United States. I'm going to give you two statistics, and I want your reaction to them. The first was a vote this past week, a Senate resolution from Senator Bernie Sanders to cut off about $650 million in aid from the U.S. to Israel. Only 27 senators supported it, but that's a record number. That's half of the Democratic caucus. The second data point is a poll from the Gallup organization. It showed that support for Israel's military action in Gaza among 18 to 34-year-olds was 9%. That's paltry. Nothing polls that low. How worried are you that there is being irreparable damage done to the U.S.-Israeli relations that will take generations to repair by Benjamin Netanyahu?
Well, I entirely agree. I don't have the figures, the exact figures that you have just now outlined, but yes, I'm very concerned. I'm very worried. This is what I've been saying a long time ago when I started to call for demand the end of the war more than a year ago, when I figured out that we have reached the what we can do in a military operation. We can have to try and accommodate in order to bring back the hostages and end this military operation. Yes, we are losing. We are losing the support. You mentioned before the criticism of such friendly nations as Canada, Great Britain, and France. I'm in favor of a Palestinian state and a two-state solution. I've been fighting for it. I've been campaigning for it. I proposed it when I was prime minister. One thing which I'm not certain about is that it should be presented as a punishment to the state of Israel. This is not a punishment for the state of Israel. It should be presented as such. It shouldn't be presented as such. This is the only possible political solution that will do good for Palestinians and Israelis. And that is the context in which it has to be presented. But yes, I'm very much afraid of what happens. And fundamentally, which is what really scares me, is not only that we lose the support of the United States, first and foremost, we lose the basic commitment, our basic commitment to the most fundamental values of compassion and of compromise and of peace that were representing the state of Israel for generations. We are losing what some people call the soul of Israel. And this is what scares me a lot.
Mr. Prime Minister, you know, there was an embargo on humanitarian aid for months. And they've started to allow some of that in. But 1,300 people have been killed while seeking food, and that's according to the UN. Why do you think Benjamin Netanyahu has not allowed more humanitarian access? Because when folks look at the starvation and using, in a lot of people's eyes, starvation as a tool of war, that is where they feel it is a genocide.
Look, I'm not certain that we can accept the figures of people that were killed and who was responsible for the killing, as they have said. I'm not sure about it. But it doesn't
This is from the UN, the United Nations.
Yeah, okay. The United Nations state, you know, there are many events which are taking place in the sites of the humanitarian supplies, which are triggered by the Hamas provocations because they want to get hold of the supplies. I'm not certain about the numbers, but this is not essential. We are the power there, and therefore we have to make all the necessary efforts to provide the humanitarian needs without any interference in the most effective manner. If it's not done, this is our responsibility. How many were killed, I'm not certain that the numbers are correct. But again, what I think is that it doesn't have to happen. And I'm afraid, and this is part of what many people here in Israel say, and this is very important that you guys and also that the international community will understand, that the millions of Israelis are against the policies which are now taken care of by the Israeli government. We are against these policies. We are against starvation. We are in favor of providing the necessary humanitarian supplies to all the people there. We are not fighting millions of Palestinians. We are fighting Hamas, and there is a good reason to fight Hamas for what they did and what they committed and the perpetration of atrocities that they are responsible for, which started the whole thing. But we're not fighting 2.2 million people that live there, and this is our responsibility to make sure that while we fight Hamas, we don't hit these people.
Mr. Olmert, we have less than a minute left, but I have to ask you this question. You stated earlier that you are now in favor of a two-state solution and that talk now from Canada and European countries of recognizing a Palestinian state shouldn't be presented as a punishment for Israel. Then I bring this up because I wonder, given what has happened to Gaza, who would be the trusted partner to get to a Palestinian state? Who should the Israelis negotiate with to make that happen?
Well, first of all, it's not that now I'm in favor of two states. As a prime minister of Israel in 2008, I presented a comprehensive peace plan on the basis of two states to the Palestinian president, and unfortunately at that time, including as part of my plan, that the Arab side of Jerusalem will be the capital of the Palestinian state and many other important elements. And the Palestinians didn't have the courage and the leadership to accept it at that time. So I'm in favor, and many Israelis in favor of a Palestinian state since then. Now, the only possible partner for negotiations ought to be the Palestinian Authority. They have to change. They have to reform. They are ineffective. They are weak. They many things, including Palestinians, that they are corrupt. They have to change, but I am responsible for my side. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to change. We have to address ourselves to deal with the Palestinian Authority, and the policy of Netanyahu is against it, unfortunately. Mm.
I want you to take a look at this video. Now, what you're going to watch, what you're going to see is Representative Justin Jones, you will remember, represents constituents in the Nashville, Tennessee area, being denied entry to a hearing. And the hearing is on whether Elon Musk is going to get to expand an AI plant in a part of Tennessee, in the Nashville area, where it is going to pollute the air and water of Representative Jones' constituents. Here's that video.
Yeah, let's sit back out here for just let everybody come through. I'll push you in the middle.
In this airport where we are,
I understand.
I'm here to get information from
the
Casey Sellers, the governor's comms person.
Okay.
And that's who I might call to let Miles come in.
Okay.
What is your name, sir?
Hey, I'm Nathan Butcher.
What is your role?
So I work with Altitude Ventures.
Is this a part of the state of Tennessee?
I understand what you're saying. It is definitely. Can you hold on for just 1 second?
I'm here in my oversight capacity.
I know. I understand.
I was elected to represent the people, 75,000 people who live on Murfreesboro Pike, who live around the airport.
I'm responsible for the list, and I'm just trying to be respectful to my role. That's all. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to you.
As a representative of this district, are you saying that I cannot go to this event?
No, I'm not saying it has to do with you being a representative. I'm just saying I just need to check the list and make sure. I'm not being rude. I want you to understand. I know who you are, and I respect you. I've talked to you before. We've met.
I have not met you, sir.
Tell me your last name.
I'm Jonathan Lawson. In my 15 years at Colonial Penn Life Insurance Company, I've helped thousands.
This is a representative who doesn't even live in the district. This is one of the state senators who does not live in this district. So if you allow somebody from Knoxville to come and not a representative of Nashville who this airport is in my district, and that is...
I hear what you're saying. I understand.
She said she's not in the district.
Make sure.
No, I've got the bus.
And my husband's with you.
Yes, I know. Yes, I'm with the chair.
Respond. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we love just, you. Excuse me. Hey, sir.
I'm a lawmaker just like this lawmaker here. This is a private event.
Sir,
this is my district. And if we allow
this
us,
this is a private event.
This is about a public partnership. Murfreesboro Pike is in my district. This airport's in my district.
Sir, this is a private event. I should not let you through.
Can we go talk?
You just let
she's on the list.
She wasn't on the list.
She is on the list.
Didn't even look like your name was on the list.
That's because I filled in for the lieutenant governor.
Her husband was on the list.
Yes, he was.
I saw the phone in here. Can you show me on your phone?
If you'll come with me, I'll sit and talk to you.
Why is Cameron second loud? He doesn't represent this district.
Cameron, do you think they should let Jones in? It's his district.
It's their event.
Isn't this a state project? Isn't that why you're here?
And joining me now, as you can see on your screen, is Representative Justin Jones. I want to start by asking you, and this is one of those ways in which new media is just different from other media. I literally saw that clip earlier today, put it on my Instagram because that seemed outrageous. And then within a couple of hours, I was texting with you and asking you if you could come on and talk about it. Tell us who, if you know, was denying you entry to a hearing about what's going to be built in your district.
Yes, well, Sajoy, it's always an honor to join you, and I'm actually sitting in front of where they're going to be voting on giving this land tomorrow to Elon Musk company, the Boring Company, and I was here looking at it, and they've already set up, the company's already set up, and I'll tell you about that later, but on Monday, I tried to go to the airport in my district to attend the public announcement in partnership with the state of Tennessee about this Tesla tunnel that's going to be running from Nashville, my district, under Murfreesboro Pike to downtown. My constituents will be impacted by this, and lobbyists were at the table and stopped me from coming in. What I saw in there were lobbyists. The particular company is called Alliance Venture Capital Firm. It's a venture capitalist firm, and they are part of this project, and they stopped me as a lawmaker from getting to get information for my constituents and asking questions on their behalf about how this project that has been rushed through and steamrolled through will impact their day-to-day lives.
So what you're saying is a private corporation can deny the elected representative of the very district where they want to build a polluting plant. They can deny entry to an elected official. That doesn't seem like that could be legal.
I mean, this is unprecedented from what I've heard from my other colleagues about, you know, usually when an event happens in your district, state lawmakers, especially a state event, are given the courtesy and the collegiality to attend and to hear and to be a part of that that process. This is the first time that a lot of my colleagues have told me, even Republicans, that this is very unusual and not the norm. But it's showing us that this is a shady deal, that Elon Musk is somebody who thinks that he's above government. And our governor here is in partnership with him. It was actually the governor's office who ordered for me to also not be allowed in. And then lobbyists were the ones that physically blocked me, as well as the police who they called to threaten to say that I was trespassing on at a public meeting involving my constituents, involving a state resources and a state deal. And so it just shows us that our government has been co-opted and it's been captured by these corporate interests like Elon Musk. And the Boring Company has had a history of harmful behavior to the environment, a history of harmful behavior to its workers. Other cities have stopped its project. It's been a failure. And yet they want to use our people here in Nashville as guinea pigs for this corporate, this corporation seeing our community as a playground and something to be experimented on, something that is not in the interest of my constituents and something that no Nashvilleian I've talked to supports.
So as you viewers take a look at this, just remember, we've now had a private prison company being able to determine whether the mayor of Newark, New Jersey could inspect that facility. And three members of Congress, one of whom has now been charged with a crime for being shoved by masked agents who may or may not be ICE. We've had the United States Senator from California tackled to the ground and detained like a criminal for just trying to ask Kristi Noem about the issuance of, you know, military, putting military on the streets of California to try to grab people off the streets there and put them into private prison facilities. And now we've had the duly elected representative in Nashville told that he's not allowed to go in because a private company gets to unimpeded get to throw a plant into his area that's going to potentially sicken people. Can you tell us what would you have wanted to ask had you been in that hearing?
I want to ask the question my constituents have been asking me. They're planning to build this Tesla tunnel from the airport to downtown, to the Broadway honky tonks and bars. It's not going to serve, working class people, the teachers, the school bus drivers, the cafeteria workers, the postal workers who live in my district. This is not going to help them. You know, this is not a real solution for public transit, but instead this is going to serve tourists and the wealthy and well-connected. The questions they had were the environmental impact. This company, the Boring Company, has had a history of polluting wastewater when they tried this project in Las Vegas. My constituents are concerned with how this will impact, them via pollution, as well as occupational and workplace safety. There's been Elon Musk sees people as expendable. He sees communities as expendable. And our community is saying we are not expendable, that people live here and that we will speak up for each other, because we're not going to allow somebody who does not even live in our community to come here, destroy it like he did in Texas with his spaceship company. He's turned that city into a sacrificial zone, and just saw it as disposable and then left them to be. And that's what he wants to do around this nation. And he's doing it around Tennessee and Memphis. He's building an XAI plant here. Nashville's trying to build this Tesla tunnel from the airport, which is going to be something that has not been done yet. With no government oversight, the FAA hasn't had a saying, the state government, we haven't had a vote on it. They're giving away state property tomorrow, but I'm here and I just went to go look at it. And employees from his company came out and told me that I was trespassing on state property and that they would call the police if I didn't leave. Just looking at it, I just wanted to see the land. We're giving away a football sized field space of land for free to Elon Musk. I want to see what that looks like and what is the better use of that land. I can see affordable housing for my constituents. I can see, investing in things that serve the people, not giving land away to the richest man in the world who's on a vanity project. That's what this is.
And thank you for that correction, because it's hard to keep track of how many horrible things are being done by the super rich at the expense of vulnerable communities. Right. Memphis is where they're going to build the AI plant, which is going to pollute their air and water. This is a Tesla tunnel. So it just seems that it's sort of a playground. The United States has become a playground for billionaires to do whatever they want. Larry Ellison, the Ellison family, him and his son David now own Paramount via Skydance, meaning they get to, I guess, control, everything from TV to movies to news to comedy for their own interests. Essentially, it feels like the whole country has been given away to Core Civic and other private prison industries. It's like a playground for the rich at this point. And Tennessee in particular, Representative Jones, has already seen this when it comes to gun manufacturers. They essentially can do whatever they want in Tennessee, no matter how many children die, no matter how many schools get shot up. There's simply no desire among your colleagues to do anything to restrain them. And now they've added Elon Musk to the list of rich, powerful business interests that get to run your state.
That's, I mean, this is not government of, by, and for the people. This is government of, by, and for corporations. And I don't, and it's no mistake, it's so hard to keep up with all the products that Elon Musk is pushing through this nation, because governments like the state of Tennessee, government ruled by Republicans, are bowing down to him. You know, this is the most insulting thing, Joy. Yesterday, Monday, the governor, when he announced his project, he said this is the coolest project he's worked on in his 8 years as governor. The most, he's the most excited for this project. You know, I would be excited about funding our public schools. I would be excited about, you know, investing in our real public transit, in our healthcare infrastructure. I would be excited about, you know, investing in climate mitigation with this record heat we're experiencing, building things that actually help working people and everyday people, not this tunnel that's only going to be for Teslas underground and that's not going to serve the people who live in this state. I mean, that's so insulting, but it shows that they're not serious, you know, for they're not serious politicians, serious legislators, or serious government officials, but they are people who want to cozy up to the rich and powerful, and a man who doesn't even care about us. Like, once he destroys Texas, he's gonna do the same to Tennessee. He's gonna go to another state. And so my message to the people across the nation is that they're coming to your community next. States like Tennessee are the tip of the spear where they come because they don't have any type of pushback. You know, they don't have any type of opposition, but they're trying to nationalize this, and they already are. You know, and he wants to talk about government efficiency. This is not an efficient project to build a one-way tunnel to a tour area when a rail system that will actually get people to and from work, to and from their children's soccer games. That's what we need, not this vanity project of a Tesla tunnel that's only going to be used for his vehicle, so it's going to profit him by getting his vehicles, building charging stations for his vehicles. It's all a profit scheme for billionaires, the wealthiest men in the world, who sees our community as a community to just come in. And as a black elected official, I feel like it's almost like an apartheid government, because the people, you know, they're forcing this outside will on people, yet the people who live here, my constituents in the most diverse district, who are black and brown and working class, have no say. That's not how government should work.
It is not almost like apartheid, Representative Jones. It is apartheid. And ask the people of Louisiana and Mississippi what it looks like when major corporations and polluters get to run the government and destroy the environment, when ordinary people have to pay the price in places like Cancer Alley. And then they just move on and drill somewhere else, and they don't care how many people get sick and die. Representative Justin Jones, thank you for always standing for what's right and standing for the people. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Mr. Joy. Good to see you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening.
What is dementia? Is it the same as Alzheimer's? What is vascular dementia, Lewy body, FTD, TBI, and CTE? If someone has memory loss, does that mean they have dementia? Millions of Americans ask these questions every day. I did too, and I learned. My wife, Ginny, developed dementia. I didn't know what to do or what was coming next. I'm Kevin Jameson, volunteer and president of the Dementia Society of America. I'm excited to offer you a free guide to understanding dementia. It's filled with facts about dementia, care planning, how doctors can help, and ways to keep your brain as healthy as possible. The Dementia Society of America is a national nonprofit, and we're ready to answer your questions. You want to live life to the fullest. I know that. Ginny did too, and I'm confident that we can help. Get your copy of the guide. Go to 1-800-DEMENTIA.org or call 1-800-DEMENTIA. Thank you.
The life of every child is precious beyond measure. If you care for a child with a disability and have limited income and resources, help is available. Children with a physical or mental disability or who are blind may qualify for monthly cash payments through the Supplemental Security Income Program, or SSI. The program provides help to meet basic needs for food, clothing, or a place to live, and disability-related needs. It's money that can make a meaningful difference. If you're the parent or caregiver of a child or teenager you think may be eligible, call Social Security at 1-800-772-1213 or visit ssa.gov/SSIKids to learn how to apply today. That's ssa.gov/SSIKids. It's real help for the children. Message produced by Social Security at U.S. taxpayer expense.
We asked parents who adopted teens to share their journey.
There are many times I thought, I can't do this. I mean, what parent isn't worried about? What am I not doing right? What am I not doing enough? And then I realized, wait, that's being a parent.
Don't worry about being perfect. I've had around three other mother figures in my life, but only one of them has taught me how a mother loves.
The greatest reward for me is he makes me better every day.
I would tell a family considering adopting a teenager that that teenager, whoever it is, needs you, and they need what you have to offer.
Tater's given me hope. He's our son, and that is what he will always be.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to learn more. A message brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Norwood, your health tip of the day from the African American Wellness Project. Asthma affects 25 million people nationwide, and every day 10 people die with it, with African American women and children being most at risk. Early warning signs include coughing, especially at night, or with exercise and wheezing. Almost all asthma can be effectively managed with a good action plan. So talk with your doctor today. And for more information, visit aawellnessproject.org.
Today, one in five Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges, but many of us don't know how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we work every day to eliminate stigma and advance mental health. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
If you're talking, they will hear you.
We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy, so we show them how. And we tell them with honest conversations that let them know what we expect. Not just one time, but every chance we get. That's especially important when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. Kids not only need to know the dangers and how to avoid them, they need to hear it often from you. And when it comes to pain medications, opioids, they need to know that they should never be taken without a prescription and never shared with friends or family. It's dangerous and illegal. So talk with your kids and guide them through the challenges of growing up safe and healthy. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
So talk, they hear you. You can do it if you try.
I'm Kevin Amos, and you're listening to the Jazz Corner.